south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I like to offer tips and warn you about mistakes me and other expats have made so you don't fall into the same hole. And here's one I think you'll thank me for later. Now, I've mentioned in past shows it's a very, very good idea to get a solar hot water heater once you finally end up in a place here in Latin America that's yours. You know, if you're renting, you're not going to get one, right? Well, you could, but you'll be bumping heads with the landlord, who will more than likely go for it. But when you finally leave, your rental contract's over, he might not let you take it with you. Or more likely, he'll let you take it, but then he'll say you damaged the roof and then you won't get your deposit back. You do remember that show I did about never getting your deposit back here in Latin America, don't you? Oh, and about moving those things around from house or apartment to apartment. You can do that. I'm talking about those standard solar hot water heaters. They're all basically the same, the inexpensive ones anyway. They don't work at all where you've got snow and ice, but here in warm climates, man, do they kick ass. And they're made in China. What ain't these days? Anyway, as mentioned, you can move them from house to house. It's possible, but they're very fragile. The big holding tank's not fragile, but there'll be like a dozen or so long glass tubes, the solar collectors attached to that tank. Those things are extremely fragile when you're moving them. Once they're installed, no problem at all. But I have to tell you, the last solar hot water heater I bought about, I'd say, 2 years ago now, there were two installers and one of the guys broke one of the glass tubes as they were lifting it up on the roof, which stalled the project till the next day because they had to go back down to the warehouse and fish one out. I bet the boss docked that guy's pay. So yes, you can move those things from one residence to the next, but you shouldn't do it yourself. You should call the installer up and make a deal with them. Have them disassemble it, repack it, bring it to the second site, and assemble it again. Might cost you $100 or so, but it's worth it. By the way, those cheap but killer solar hot water heaters cost around $1,000 to $1,500. They come in three sizes, 40, 60, and 80 gallon. I always recommend get the 80 gallon one. You won't regret it. All right, that's one tip, but here's a more important one. You've heard me say over and over again, Latino construction workers and builders like to skimp on materials. Like, for example, downsizing pipes, tubing, and electrical wire. They do it whether you want them to or not. Like using cheap paint, they're used to it. It comes natural to them. And the same thing happens when they're setting up these solar hot water heaters. And here's the mistake that contractors almost always make when setting up these things. And they don't even get that what they're doing is setting you up for future problems. They use half-inch PVC pipe for the water connections instead of three-quarter inch. Now, the price difference between using those two different kinds of pipe for this kind of situation is about $5. But the difference in functionality is huge. So go ahead, splurge. Spend the extra $5. You'll be glad you did. Get the three-quarter inch plastic PVC tube instead of the half-inch that they'll install if you don't say anything. And don't let them talk you out of it. It'll make a huge difference in your water pressure and water flow, and how fast that hot water gets to your shower head or kitchen sink. I mean, look, you don't want to wait all day for hot water when you're in the shower, and you don't want it to dribble like a geezer with prostate problems, but it just might, and there'll be no turning back once you've installed half-inch plastic pipe other than three-quarter inch. Of course, your solar water heater is going to be on the roof, but the farther it is away, the longer the run of the pipe, that is, to where you really want your hot water to be, like in your shower or your kitchen sink. The longer the run and the smaller diameter the plastic tubes that feed it, the more the water pressure and flow will be restricted. And remember, too, there are enough built-in restrictions within that hot water unit itself. Remember those dozen or so glass tubes I was talking about? Well, the water has to flow through all of those, and that restricts pressure and flow. You're stuck with that, but you don't want to make things worse by having half-inch pipe, a skinny pipe like that running half the length of your house. And if you're thinking more is better, why not go with one-inch pipe? Well, you could do that, but it won't help one bit over three-quarter inch. That's been proven time and time again. Three-quarter is plenty. Now, if you're just not handy and never played with those kinds of tubes and pipes before, that half-inch means half-inch inside diameter, and three-quarter is three-quarter, one-inch, one-inch. Oh, and if you run into an installer that says, wait a minute, half-inch will work all right. Don't argue. It's your installation. Tell them you want 3/4. That's it. Oh, and by the way, unlike the way water pipes are installed up in the first world, up in the States, down here they don't use any insulation wrap around pipes and tubes at all. Basically, it's unnecessary because things don't freeze down here. And that's pretty much the only reason they use the stuff up north, by you. And since they don't put insulation around pipes here in Latin America, that saves you some dough, too. But there's one little exception. When you install an air conditioning unit, the tubes and pipes included in the package are insulated. I'm talking about the most universally used kind of air conditioners here in Latin America, called mini split air conditioners. And man, those things are great. They're super efficient. They really put out, and they cost only around $500 or $600 complete. The generic models do anyway. You get a Samsung, LG, or Panasonic, could be a grand. Oh, and they're quiet too, but remember, there's two parts to the system, the part that's in your room and the part that's outside, generally on the roof, that contains your fan, condenser, and compressor. And when you buy one of those things and take it out of the box, you'll see it includes a 20-foot or so length of 3/4-inch diameter copper tubing wrapped in a kind of black spongy insulation. And in this case, that insulation really helps because if it wasn't insulated, the copper tubing would be directly in the sun at least part of the day. And remember, with air conditioning, you're trying to cool things, right? And copper is a great conductor of heat and cold. So that's pretty much the only place in Latin America where insulation really counts. That's why they include it in the box from the factory. So they don't use insulation on water tubes here in Latin America. But if they did, it would help. You know, keep the heat in the pipes on those long runs inside and outside the house. But not a whole hell of a lot, not that much to make a big difference. The expense of the insulation is not worth the benefit you receive. At least that's been true historically. But as energy prices go up, that will enter into the equation. So in the future, you can expect pipe insulation to start popping up. And to drive home the fact that in Latin America, insulation is rarely used. You might notice if you have any friends or live in a high-rise residential tower yourself. Let's say, in a Latin American city that's not in the Altiplano. In other words, you live in a place where you have air conditioning. You know, every gringo and expat that lives on the coast, has a beach house, or lives at lower elevations has air conditioning. Of course, there are always exceptions, but most all gringos and expats have air conditioning at least in their bedrooms. Well, it's a funny thing. I've noticed when I had places in residential towers, or when I rented an Airbnb in a residential tower, many times when I get up in the morning or get up in the middle of the night to hit the bathroom or whatever, I'd walk across the tile floor barefoot, and I'd hit some cold spots. Sometimes some real, unnatural cold spots. And that just meant the person living in the floor below me had his air conditioning running all night. So he was cooling his air and the floor and walls around him too. Without insulation, you pay to heat the air around you and the walls, floors, and ceilings too. It's a terrific waste of energy, but it is what it is. Same thing happens when you turn on your air conditioning. You cool the adjacent walls, floors, and ceilings of your neighbors too. However, the good news is that in the last few years, air conditioners have gotten really efficient with constant improvements all the time and really cheap for the technology you get. But believe me, if you don't live in the Altiplano, if you live on the coasts or in low elevation regions, you're almost certain to have an air conditioner or two. Oh, and note, the electricity for that and your pool pump will be your two biggest expenses on your electric bill. Now, poor and middle-class Latinos almost never have air conditioners, and if they do, they'll mostly remain unused because they're so expensive to run. Though upper-middle-class and wealthy Latinos will always install them, obviously because they can afford AC and the higher electric bills too. The thing is, if you're not in the Altiplano, if you live in lower elevations or have a beach house, unless you have an AC unit or units that are less than 4 years old, you'll find those older AC units big energy hogs. Here's another thing I've noticed. If you do have air conditioning, that means you're not living in the Altiplano. If you have guests stay over, you'll find out in a hurry if your visitors have air conditioning in their own houses. Here's what I've noticed. Those who are not used to having air conditioning, they have no idea how to efficiently use the thing. They'll scale it down to the lowest temperature, make it work the absolute hardest, and of course use the most energy. Leave the bathroom door open and a couple of windows too. Oh, it'll cool all right, but that means all night the thing will never turn off. It'll run constantly. What that tells me about the guests is that they have no experience with air conditioners at all. And there's a huge chance they have not got a working air conditioning unit at their own place. They'd find out in a hurry if they did that at home. Cranked the things to maximum cool and left a few windows and doors open. Their electric bills would be in the stratosphere. Speaking of electric bills, have you noticed that energy costs are spiking up all over the world? With analysts predicting $5 a gallon gas throughout the United States later this winter, I understand in California it's already $7 a gallon. Have you been reading about that huge energy crisis in Europe right now? Their heating costs have doubled, in some places even tripled, this season, putting the blame on the supply chain crisis instigated by the COVID-idiot crap. If you believe that, I beg to differ. Follow the money instead. Anyway, those of you guys and gals out there who've gone solar, you're looking pretty brilliant and clairvoyant these days, aren't you? And as for everyone else out there, what are you waiting for? Yeah, I know. If you're a renter, going solar is nuts. However, if you're an owner, again, what are you waiting for? And of course, if you're living here in Latin America or have your plan B in action down here, going solar is the best of all worlds because whatever solar system you may have sized for your place up in the States, you can cut that cost in half when doing a solar installation here in Latin America. That's just part of the good news. Now, of course, I've received emails from people saying, Johnny, I've done the calculation and the payback's 10, 12, 15 years, whatever. Sometimes even 20 if you're going all out and getting Tesla brand name stuff. Yep, I get emails from people saying, Johnny, given the expensive outlay and the long payback, it's just not worth it. Well, listen up, because you're working under very mistaken assumptions. There's something wrong with your numbers. You ain't ciphering right. The big error is when people do those calculations, they use the present cost of energy. And didn't we just lay some facts on you that said they're projecting gas prices to go up 50% this year? And in Europe, energy costs have doubled, even tripled in just this last year too? What that means is, for example, if you've done the calculations to go completely off the grid and your payback is 15 years, and you used today's or last month's energy prices, if energy prices double, and you've just heard that's happening right now, your payback for going solar is not 15 years, if that's what your calculations show, but 7.5. And if, let's say, in the next couple years, energy prices double again, and they're projected to do so, you know, suddenly your payback for going solar is half of that 7.5-year number, which is less than 4. Anyway, to make it simpler, that'd be like putting all the money you spent on a solar system in the bank at 25% interest per year. Anyone would be nuts not to take that deal. Are you getting this? Is it sinking in? And we haven't even hit on the subject of the paybacks on electric cars using your very own home solar charging station. But we'll leave that for another day because I do get emails, you know, from people saying this energy stuff in solar is kind of boring. But where were we? Oh, yeah. We were originally talking about hot water and tube sizes regarding the installation of a solar hot water heater. All right, here's another tip I wish I would have known when I first got down here to Latin America. Of course, back then, there was no YouTube, podcasts, internet, iPhones. Imagine what that was like, landing in Latin America with no internet, no Skype, Facebook, WhatsApp, or Signal. Hey, you take the good with the bad, right? Imagine that. No anti-social media. Back then, people had conversations in person and had to look each other in the eye while speaking. So when I arrived, there were no jabs, no COVID cards, no lockdowns, no sociopathic Dr. Fauci spewing candy-coated lies either. No Craigslist, Amazon, Waze, Google Maps, eBay, or Google Translate. Wait a minute. Don't get the wrong idea here. By now, I think you know how much I hate social media and Google. But when that stuff first came out and it was the only game in town, besides Ask Jeeves, remember that? Some 20 years ago or so, all that new tech was a godsend to us living overseas. Wait a minute. Those of us living in Central and South America aren't actually living overseas. There's no sea between us and the U.S. Anyway, social media and Google started out on the right foot until they morphed into the big pharma, big government, data collection, surveillance state. On top of that, imagine coming down, not knowing a lick of Spanish, with phone calls back to the States before things like Skype came along. Before Skype, that was pre-2000. Calls back to the States were $1 a minute. All right, now where were we? Oh yeah, talking about plumbing tubes and tips. As soon as you rent or buy a place, get yourself a garbage disposal and have it installed in the kitchen sink. Don't skimp and get the half horsepower model either because it's cheaper. Get the 3/4 horse model. You won't be sorry. A bigger motor like that will never stall and probably never burn out, no matter what your cleaning lady shoves down its throat. Oh, you'll like this. Biggest cleaning lady garbage disposal disaster story? Well, back in the day, my cleaning lady dropped her flip phone down the garbage disposal. Man, what a racket. Sparks flew. But it was a 3/4 horse brand name incinerator unit. Took a licking, kept on ticking. Now, I'm suggesting a kitchen garbage disposal because you've heard me say before, they undersize tubing here in Latin America. That means your kitchen sink's going to clog a lot. Oh, and do teach your cleaning lady how to use it. She'll be scared shitless at first. because her only experience with garbage disposals is seeing some guy lose a hand down one in a B-grade slasher movie. That said, you still should teach her. It'll save you a lot of disgusting plunger moments. Enough said about that. Next, we'll take an email from Mr. Tommy. He asks a question I get all the time. It keeps coming up, so here goes. He says, "Hey there, Johnny. Thanks for the interesting and informative podcast. I'm 40, have a wife and 3 kids. We're closing on a property in Baja California this week. Things are getting indeed quite toxic stateside. Do you have any advice on gainful or good employment south of the border? If this is already covered in previous episodes, please let me know. Thanks. Signed, Mr. Tommy." Well, Mr. Tommy, I've hit on that subject in past shows probably 100 times. That means at least once for every 10 podcasts. And my response is pretty much always a version of the same thing. Unless when you come down, you already have an internet business. They really are the best kind for many reasons. You can do it from your home. You don't need government permission. No permits, no inspections. Quite possibly no taxes either. And unless you're doing Zoom calls, you don't even have to suit up or dress nice. You can run it in your pajamas, your underwear, or buck naked. By the way, did you know the buck in buck naked doesn't refer to a male deer? It refers to a male Native American Indian, also known as, if you remember your John Wayne movies, as a buck. Go ahead, look it up and see why. Anyway, once you get down to Latin America, if you could pull off an internet business, that's the way to go. For one, you don't need an office. You can operate at home. And with most internet businesses, unless they get huge, you don't even need very many extra employees, possibly none. In fact, I like to use the example of Bitcoin Dan, who's living in Guatemala. He's been running an internet business there 10 years or so now. From a little office he set up in the bedroom of his house. He lives in a gated, guarded subdivision in a really nice residential area dispersed amongst the coffee plantations about 20 minutes from Guatemala City going south on that famous Pan American Highway, the part of that highway called the Road to El Salvador, because next stop, El Salvador. Anyway, Bitcoin Dan's got an internet business. He created the world's most used genealogy program. You know what that is, right? Family trees and all that. And for the last 10 years, ever since he's been living in Latin America, he administers the whole thing out of his little office that he set up in one of the bedrooms of his house. It's him and just 2 other employees working from their houses in Guatemala, too. And Dan and his 2 employees service, get this, 3.5 million clients. With no specially installed business high-speed internet either. He uses the usual suspect residential internet from internet provider Claro, C-L-A-R-O. Of course, he elected to have the highest speed, though nothing out of the ordinary, nothing you and I couldn't get. I think he pays something like $70 a month. So just think about that for a second. He's got 3.5 million customers, 2 employees, and he's running it all from a bedroom of his house in Guatemala using regular residential internet. Meanwhile, I hear from expat gonna-bes and wannabes up in the States. They say the following to me all the time. "How's the internet down there in Latin America, Johnny? I'm hearing that it sucks." Well, I'll tell you, some years ago it was spotty and oftentimes did suck. And maybe if you're far, far away from a cell tower, way out in the boonies, and when you look around you see you've got no neighbors, you will have spotty and crappy internet. But as long as you're living in a city or on the outskirts and not completely isolated, the internet is pretty good. Just ask Bitcoin Dan. Now, as far as Mr. Tommy's email, he says, "Johnny, do you have any advice on gainful good employment south of the border?" Hey, I get that question 10 times a week, too. Well, there are lots of really low-end waiter, waitress, and bartending jobs. However, the wages will be crap. You'll be making minimum wage Latin American style, about $300 to $400 a month. Even so, those jobs are mostly available on or near the Gringo Tourist Trail. And with that kind of income, you'll be going native in a hurry. The exception being Hooters girls, who make 2, 3, even 4 times minimum wage. Yep, that's right. Almost all big Latin American cities have a Hooters franchise or two. And of course, we all know life is fair, so they hire those girls because of their sparkling personalities, right? Anyway, Mr. Tommy, the jobs I've been describing are off the books. In other words, you'll get paid in cash. Technically illegal, yes, but half of Latin America works that way. Because here in Latin America, you cannot get a legit job on the books unless you've got permanent residency. And with some Latin countries, even if you have permanent residency, you're not allowed to work. Some countries have residency programs with exclusions like that. But in every Latin country except Cuba and Venezuela, you can start a business and hire people. You could be the boss. It's totally legal, too, and governments love it. That's true whether you have residency or not, because every country wants full employment. And, of course, businesses on the books that pay taxes. That's why so many gringos and expats choose internet businesses. You can make tons of money and yet be completely off the books. Now, again, I'm not suggesting you do anything illegal, but just giving you a heads up on how so many gringos and expats down here make quite a bit of dough. Oh, and Mr. Tommy, if by chance you do hook up with a corporate job here, it's practically a guarantee you're not going to make first world wages, even if you work for a first world company like Siemens, Dell, Ford, Hertz, etc., etc. I mean, look, one of the reasons transnationals put up big offices here in the third world is because they don't have to pay first world wages. It's called outsourcing. The thing is, if you go to any big city here in Latin America, you could check out the classified ads on the internet or in the newspaper. They still have newspapers here. There are all kinds of job postings. Lots of jobs with transnationals, too. And embassy jobs. But check out the fine print and you'll see you have to speak Spanish fluently. You gotta be bilingual. And I mean really bilingual. You have to pass the TOEFL exam, you know. You have to have that certificate that says you're fluent in Spanish in both reading and writing. So, down here in Latin America, as far as getting a corporate job, if you're a gringo, you do have the gringo advantage, but only if you're good enough to pass the TOEFL exam in Spanish. And still, you might just make only half the money you'd make in the same kind of job up in the States. However, as you know, here in Latin America, your money goes two or three times as far. Again, provided you're not a lush or living close to or in gringo tourist areas. Oh, and don't forget there are always teaching jobs, teaching at helicopter schools down here. You don't even have to know any Spanish. Why? Because in those high-end helicopter schools, the kids get half their classes in Spanish and half in English. And being a gringo who speaks no Spanish, that's perfectly fine because you'll just teach the English sessions. However, that market too has been pretty much decimated during this COVID-iot thing and all the lockdowns. And even though schools are starting to open now, there's lots of uncertainty. So schools are skittish about hiring. So who knows what your teaching prospects might be. Oh, and I have to mention starting salary for a gringo expat who's teaching at a helicopter school is between $600 to $1,000 a month. That'll hardly get you the tits of the rich lifestyle, even down here. But all that shouldn't discourage you, because I found that some of the best jobs, work situations, and business opportunities gringos and expats just fall into. Usually, believe it or not, by happenstance, pure luck, and serendipity. It happens all the time. In fact, I can't tell you how many successful gringos in business have told me that never in a million years would they have predicted, when living back up in the States, that is, the kind of job or business they would end up in once they'd been down in Latin America for a while. In fact, it seems to be almost an unwritten rule unless, again, you've got your own internet business when you come down here. Eventually, you'll end up in a business that never in a million years was on your radar before. And it all happens, all those ideas start flooding in and percolating, the more quality boots on the ground you get. If you stay alert and keep your eyes open, you start realizing there are many little business niches that are just begging to be filled. A lot of them take very little capital, too. Now, as for me, I see business niches all the time. I mention them to people once in a while. In fact, a lot of times you'll be sitting around with a bunch of gringos and expats and someone will say, why don't they have this or why don't they produce that? Or they notice glaring flaws or inefficiencies in existing businesses and they realize with just a few tweaks, they could be the killer competition. But those kind of thoughts won't magically appear in your brain unless you've got some quality boots on the ground and see things for yourself. Here's the perfect example. For 25 years now, I've been wearing a certain kind of belt. In fact, I've got five or six of these belts made by the same belt and shoemaker in Panajachel, Guatemala. That's the first little town you get to when you go to Lake Atitlan, considered the most beautiful lake in the world. You heard me talk about that. Anyway, about 25 years ago, I stumbled into this little shoe shop and there were tons of belts hanging on a rack. Fantastic hand-tooled leather belts. None of that tacky touristy jive either. I'm talking about real classy belts. Many different styles and designs, too. Even plain black, brown, and tan belts with no tooling on them whatsoever. Really nice stuff. And as I was going through the belt racks, there were probably 150 assorted belts there. I noticed that five or six of those belts had hidden zippers on the inside. I thought, man, that's just what the doctor ordered them. A beautiful belt with a completely stealthy zipper. For money, gold coins, even a flash drive or two. And because of the thickness and quality of the leather, once you had it on and fastened, there was no way at all to tell. It was anything other than a normal belt. And man, those zippers too were nicely done and very heavy duty. So I bought a few and started wearing them exclusively. I'm wearing one right now. I wear them all the time. I never use anything else. Now, you can go on the internet and look up belts with hidden zippers and they'll show a lot of nylon belts. Just cheap pieces of crap compared to these. They're so thin that if you fold a couple of $100 bills and put them inside the hidden zipper compartment, there's an obvious bulge like a snake who's just swallowed a rat. Not too stealthy. You'll never catch me wearing one of those. I've been spoiled. So anyway, ever since I discovered that little shop, I eventually accumulated about 5 or 6 various styles. And in all that time, I've ruined only one. Still, 20, even 25 years later, I pass by that same little booth. He's got the same 150 or so belts on display, but only 5 or 6 of them have zippers. And in fact, you have to ask the guy if he's got zippered belts because they're not obvious and there's no science pointing out that they even exist, that there's 2 kinds of belts on that rack. The thing is, over the years, every single gringo and expat I've ever shown my belt to, they say, "Wow, I want 1 or 2 or 3 of those. Tell me where." And I say, "Well, the only place I know of is in a little leather shoe and belt shop in Panajachel, Lake Atitlan." Now, I've been to Lake Atitlan many times. And to walk down to the lake from the little town of Panajachel, that's the first town you get to from the Pan-American Highway, you can't help but walk right past that shop. And occasionally I'll be with a gringo or expat who says, "I want to go. Take me there." So we pop in and get the deal done. But like I said, there are so few belts in the rack, they often don't have regular sizes, especially for junk food, fortified, supersized gringos. No problem, though, since they're all custom handmade. You just tell them your size, and he'll make 1, 2, or 10 of them up and have them ready the next day. Again, these are not touristy trinket belts you buy as souvenirs for your Aunt Trudy's kids. Now, the last time we bought 1 or 2, we started the haggling at $20. I got them down to 12. But you know, every time I pass the place, here's what's going through my mind. I'm thinking there's a gringo business in all this. Now, if I was a fresh green expat just coming down, looking to start a business, I'd make an exclusive deal with the belt maker. Number one, I'd create a website, maybe even do affiliates with companies like Lands End, L.L. Bean, North Face, any one of those leather goods and outdoor clothing outfits. There's just tons of brick and mortar and online retailers you could approach with that product. And then there's a company called Outback that makes those great passport pouches. They've got some zipper belts too, but it's the nylon crap. You get where I'm going with this? You could start selling those things and you wouldn't even need any inventory. You get the prepaid orders and then you make the product. And the cost, well, I think in bulk, you probably could get the guy down to maybe $6 or $8 a piece. And believe me, you could sell them all day long on the internet for $30, maybe more. I think you know why I'm mentioning this now. Or maybe not. Because I'm virtually certain it would be a killer idea to make tons of money. And yet, 25 years after I discovered the place, no one's jumped on that idea yet. Imagine how many tourists and expats have walked by that place in the last 25 years, not knowing such an opportunity was right under their noses. So, Mr. Tommy, that's what I mean about having to get quality boots on the ground. That's how you see business niches that are just begging to be filled.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. He knows Spanish.